Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. Today is Monday, January 25th, already 2021. I'm the host of the show, Cara Santamaria, and we recorded this week's episode on Inauguration Day on January 20th. What a momentous day. I'm very excited about this week's show, but before we dive into it, I do want to thank those of you who continue to make Talk Nerdy possible week after week. Remember, Talk Nerdy is and will always be 100% free to download, and that is because of the selfless support from individuals just like you. This week's top patrons of the show include Michael Gaucher, Mary Neva, Leonard Prince, Christopher Pitts, June Sapara, Pasquale Gelati, Ulrika Hagman, Dudas Infinitas, Charles Payet, Brian Holden, Pedro M. Rosario Barbosa, Daniel Lang, David J. E. Smith, Robert Christ, and Elise Christie. Thank you all so, so, so much. And remember, there are other ways to support the show. You can rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast, download the show. You can also shop in the Talk Nerdy store by visiting talknerdymerch.com or by going to the main show page at carasantamaria.com or talknerdy.com. All paths lead to the show. All right. I am very excited about this week's episode because I got to reconnect with an old friend and colleague. Her name is Susan Tyler Hitchcock, and she's the senior editor for the books division of National Geographic Partners. She's here this week to talk about the all-new National Geographic Almanac 2021, trending topics, big ideas in science, photos, maps, facts, and more. This is an incredible compendium of art and photography and knowledge and information that runs the gamut, literally anything and everything you could want to know about the universe that we live in. This thing is jam-packed. I know you're going to love it as much as I do. I know you're going to love it as much as I did when I actually worked with the Almanac, both on 2019 and the 2020 versions. That's how much I care about this project. I highly recommend you all go out and pick up your own copy. And without any further ado, here she is, Susan Tyler Hitchcock. Well, Susan, thank you so much for joining me today.
I am so happy to join you, Cara. It's great to talk.
It is a good day in America, a fresh start. We are recording on Inauguration Day, which is always an exciting day, regardless of, you know, where your politics lie, that it's just a real celebration of the democratic process here. So a little bit of a shift from my last episode when we were recording the day of the Capitol riots.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So I think there'll be a fresher tone
today, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm really thrilled that we have the opportunity to chat. It might take a little bit of background for the folks listening. I think most of you probably know, because I pushed it I promoted it on the show a couple of years ago, that I was involved in National Geographic's Almanac 2019 and 2020, which is this really beautiful compendium, like a lot of, incredible photographs, a ton of information, pretty thick book that allows you to basically learn something new every single day of the year. And then some. I think it's definitely over 365 pages. And then this year for the Almanac 2021, Susan, my guest, who is absolutely so wonderful and who I worked with on the original too, has not only taken the reins as far as making the dang thing, but also doing my very small role in working on the, what would you call it? Like the foreword to the book, right?
Yeah, the forward. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
You set the path, Cara, and I just followed. And
come on, you did all the work.
You were quizmaster number one.
I love it though. It's such a fun project to have been involved in. And of course, from where you're sitting is such a different project because I can only imagine that it was a ton of work, but I'm really excited to celebrate this book with you over the course of the hour that we have together. So maybe we can start back at the beginning. You are, senior editor for the books division at National Geographic Partners. Mm-hmm. So you oversee a lot of what happens over there. Like, what is the role of a senior editor?
Well, we have editors at a senior level and then an associate and an assistant level. And a senior editor, some publishing companies would call me an acquiring editor in the sense that I am at the level of making the plans for the book. But we have so few people in our group that I end up helping to make the books as well. We at National Geographic, we do acquire some books, which means that, you know, an author has an idea or has a manuscript and comes to us with the book sort of already formulated. But we do a lot of creating of our own books as well. And the Almanac is an example of that. We get an idea, we come up with a plan, we even sometimes come up with the outline and the contents of the book, and then we find contributors and pull them into the process. A lot of these books, like the Almanac, are totally team projects. There's no way one person could do all of this. There's writing, there's editing, there's fact checking, there's photo research, there's design, and then not to mention, you know, copy editing and proofreading and all that sort of thing. So it's a real team effort.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we often think about books, we think about, you know, a book is written by a person and there is an author to the book. But, you know, the Almanac doesn't have an author. The Almanac was put together by so many different people. And for the purposes of, let's say, specifically, the 2021 Almanac, was the entire thing done sort of in-house? Like, these were all staff writers and editors and photographers at National Geographic?
So writers, we do usually hire some freelance writers to help us with that. We also, we do harvest material from National Geographic Magazine, nationalgeographic.com online, Traveler Magazine. We have to, when we do that, we have to interpret it. We have to edit the text sometimes, and we have to certainly have to edit the visuals. So in that way, there are lots of writers coming in to the mix. We have one photo editor usually and a couple of graphic designers, one person who, like, I'm the senior editor in terms of the text content and she's the art director in terms of the layout. And then she'll have someone working under her who kind of does the more technical, more sort of crafting it, putting it all together, as opposed to visualizing the look of the book. There are all those, and it's hard to count how many people actually contribute if you go into it that deeply.
Gosh, yeah. Is there anybody whose job it is? Maybe this is your job to just develop the timeline and, like, keep track of everything?
Yeah. So every book that we do has a project manager, and often the senior editor is the project manager, or sometimes there's a senior editor with a project manager under the senior editor. In this case, I was the project manager, and yeah, timeline. I mean, we've got a managing editor who helps me set those deadlines. As a project manager, it was my responsibility to make sure that everybody was doing all of the things that they were supposed to be doing on time. And there are lots of moving parts. It's something that I love, and it can get complicated, but it's a fun challenge.
And what a kind of boon that, you know, working at National Geographic, which is, I think, its own sort of complicated behemoth. And maybe in a minute we can parse exactly, like, where are the divisions and what, you know, what are all the different, like, kind of businesses within a business. But even before we get to that, what just a complicated but exciting opportunity to be able to, as you sort of mentioned, mine so much content. I mean, National Geographic's Instagram alone,
yes,
it's like, I mean, how many followers does it have? It's something out of control.
In the millions.
In the millions. And just all of the incredible photographers. Like,
keeps cheering us on. We're trying to get, you know, to the number of Beyonce and that kind of thing. So we're right up there in the top 10, as I understand it.
How cool. But then also how overwhelming to say, okay, we're going to do a 2021 almanac. We're going to talk about what are the big ideas in science and nature and conservation and, you know, exploration and travel and all of these beautiful things with maps and photos and blurbs and information and infographics. Like, how do you even know where to start?
It's a challenge, and it's a guess in some ways, an educated guess. I mean, the first chapter of the book is called Trending, and it's divided into five big ideas. And we work so far ahead that there is this sort of, you know, take a plunge, you know, sort of take a guess on what are going to be the big things in the next coming year or so. We watch, you know, watch the news, watch the media, watch National Geographic itself to see what ideas and initiatives are being emphasized, and then try to kind of dive into those and learn more so that we can share with the readers.
Yeah. And so when we look at these trending topics at the very beginning of the book, I'm seeing everything from obviously infectious disease to water to biodiversity and conservation, and to kind of learning more about, and I guess I should say deeper into the cosmos through next generation imaging technology within astronomy. So it really is just wide ranging. But the idea here is to say 2021, what is going to be on the horizon for 2021?
You know, one really interesting backstory on this is that if you notice, we do have two spreads on the coronavirus. We have one spread on the coronavirus, and then the partner spread is on all the infectious agents that humans experience, a virus as being one of five that we feature. Well, this was not in the plan back in the fall of, what would that be, 2019, which is when
we started planning
what should be our trending topics. And we were ready to go to the printer in March of last year when it became really clear that this book would be off the mark if we did not include something about the coronavirus. So I won't quite say pulled it off the presses, but we did pull it back from the printer and created those two spreads at the very last minute in order to be a little more timely.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because thinking back to the work that that we did on 2019 and 2020, it's like, yeah, nobody saw. I mean, we all saw it coming in the general sense, but nobody saw it coming in a specific, like, this is going to happen this year and it'll be this type of infectious agent.
Yeah. We work so far ahead because, you know, the whole process of proofreading and then getting things to the printer, especially when you have all these color photographs that take a lot of precision work in pre-press as well as at the printer. And then we print overseas in Asia, and books are shipped by freight. What do you call it? Freighter, not freighter. What do you call those?
Yeah, like a big boat.
Big boats, right.
Like, I don't know.
And then we have to get the books into the warehouse about 2 months before they actually go on sale in a bookstore. So we have to send a book to the printer. We have to be done with it 6 to 8 months before it actually is in the bookstores. And that is one of the challenges of doing an almanac, because you want it to be timely. You want it to be of the moment and up to date. But our manufacturing process and our shipping process is such that we can't quite be as up to date as we'd like to be. So
Yeah, and but it's still so important that it be this physical, tactile book. It's, you know, one of the things that I love the most about the Almanac is that, like you mentioned, it's so colorful, it's so digestible, it's written in this very kind of short burst way that you can flip to any page and learn something new, or you can, you know, find something specifically based on the index or the table of contents, or you can read it cover to cover like a book. But regardless of that, it's this kind of the truest form of a, I don't know, a coffee table book, yet mm-hmm. it's not pretentious. It's affordable. I mean, it's a $20 book here in the United States. It's only $20, but it's got, you know, well over 350 pages of beauty. And it's also speaks to all levels. You know, there's a, like your grandmother could read it and your child could read it. And I think that's so cool.
Well, I'm glad you see that. We certainly try that way. And we try to have a little bit of something for everything, for everyone. And mm-hmm. also, one of the things we decided to do from the very beginning in the 2019 Almanac was to sort of divide it into, to create a layout that had chunks, little chunks that one could read and enjoy. So you could really browse and like, read a paragraph here, a paragraph there, and still have fun with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that resonates a lot. I mean, that's definitely how some of my friends have told me. I remember back when I was working on the last two, and some of my friends would buy their copies and they were like, do you know what I call this? I call this like a bathroom book. And I'm not saying that to denigrate it. I'm saying that to celebrate it. Like every time somebody at their house would use the bathroom, they'd come out and be like, did you know?
Right. It is the ultimate bathroom book. It's true.
I'm like, I just love that so much. It's so true. So, you know, maybe before we get to some of the content of the book we had pointed to earlier, this confusion or complication around National Geographic as this behemoth that's been around for so long, that's been guiding culture and really like an icon, you know, that yellow rectangle for mm-hmm. so long. Mm-hmm. I personally, for a decent part of my career, have long felt a kinship with National Geographic. I really feel like I'm home and it's my family. And it's interesting because I'm not a staff. You know, I never have been on staff at National Geographic in any role. I've always been a freelancer who gets hired to do work with them. Mm-hmm. But even I've been super confused about, okay, I'm working with the books division. Wait, is this, okay, now I'm doing TV, but what's the difference between the society and the partners? Yeah. So maybe you can help me make a little bit of sense of what this company is.
I can help a little bit, but I have to say it's always a bit of a moving target.
Right. Okay.
Corporately. So quite a few years ago, and I can't tell you exactly what it is, but maybe 5 years ago, a deal was struck between the National Geographic Society, which has now been in existence 130 some years, is still a nonprofit. The deal was struck between the nonprofit National Geographic Society and 21st Century Fox. And 21st Century Fox made a significant contribution, like $750 million, I believe, mm-hmm. to the endowment of the nonprofit National Geographic Society in exchange for majority ownership of all the profit-making parts of National Geographic, which involved television, magazines, books, expeditions, all of the things that were actually profit-making businesses. That became National Geographic Partners. In the
distinction.
That's the distinction. There is still a very close relationship between National Geographic Society and National Geographic Partners, and there is a kind of a corporate link, but there also mm-hmm. is like a spiritual link. We are very, we work really closely with National Geographic Society and all of its initiatives and missions. and try really hard and find content in what they are supporting in science and exploration, and then bring it over into the magazine or into books or lectures or that sort of thing. So since that time, though, remember Disney acquired 21st Century Fox. Yeah. So we are now a Disney company. And all along the way, there's been the pie's been cut up and cut up and cut up again. So who we're connected with in the organization keeps changing. But all along, this uber identity of National Geographic pulls us all together.
Yeah, yeah. And so the partners, which we think of as more, like you were saying, the profit generating portion of the company, there is a line, although there's a lot of, as you said, a spiritual connection between that and the society. But the role of the society has long been to help fund explorers and researchers, to help fund exploration and research, and to celebrate science and exploration.
That is exactly right. That's right. Yep. And I will say also that all of our products give back to the society. I mean, one of the reasons that our books have a little thing on the back that says, when you read with us, you help further the work of our scientists, explorers, and educators around the world. That is literally and monetarily true. Every one of our books contributes about a 25, it may even be up to 28% of our profit goes back to the National Geographic Society.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And the cool thing about specifically about the Almanac is that you also within its pages get to celebrate the work of members of the society or of explorers that are endowed by the society.
That's exactly right. And that, we feel that's kind of an assignment on our part to discover the really interesting stories and the fascinating people that National Geographic is supporting with grant money in their science and exploration.
Yeah. So I've got to ask, when, you know, this is the third year that the Almanac has been available, has been in production. What inspired you and the team to take that plunge there before 2019 and say, we're going to do this really big, really complex project?
Well, there is a very easy answer to that, which is the success of the Kids Almanac. The Kids Book Group within National Geographic is now into its 12th or 13th or 14th year publishing an almanac, and it's been a huge success for them. And my boss, who's the publisher and editorial director, had been saying for years, well, if they can do it, we can do it. And so we finally kind of took the concept of almanac, the concept of a book full of information, and took it to the adult level. So we really were inspired by the success of the Kids Almanac.
That's brilliant. And so the Kids Almanac is similar in its design or its scope? Like, what were some of the iterations that you made to say, how do we make this right for a broader and, you know, a little bit of an older audience? That's not to say that kids don't enjoy it, of course.
Right. Yeah. Actually, one of the things we began to realize is that what we were making was the almanac that a kid would enjoy once he or she got too old for the Kids Almanac.
Right.
And there are certain ways in which the adult almanac was inspired and mirrors the kids. That it, maybe the most important is that the end of the book is just a solid atlas. Basically, it's we have maps of all the continents. We have flags and facts about every country in the world, and that's something that the Kids Almanac does every year as well. Also sort of thematic chapters that represent the range of content that is important to National Geographic. That was another thing that we picked up from from the Kids' Almanac. But in terms of design and approach, we really needed to go at it our own way. So we, you know, we were inspired, but we also took it in our own direction.
Yeah. And when I think about the kind of design, even as I'm flipping through the 2021 almanac, the design and the imagery, it's such a mix of graphic design, of infographics, of artist renderings, and then of obviously photography, which is mm-hmm. such an important celebration within the sort of National Geographic brand. And so how did you go about, you know, gosh, just like choosing which images were going to best represent these different stories?
You know, one of the hardest part, every chapter has at least one, sometimes two spreads that we call the At Nat Geo spreads. They're the best of At Nat Geo. They are from our Instagram account, and they are great photographs. Each spread has a different theme. I'm looking right now at the one, it's called Top Photos of Aerial Views. So that we searched, our photo editor and our designer searched the whole realm of Instagram, Nat Geo Instagram photos to find the best 8 aerial views that they could find. So that is, it's a challenge. We try to make sure that there is diversity in the photographers that we're showing. We also always have a line or two just saying what that photograph is. One of my favorite parts actually of the book is the last page of every chapter. The motto of National Geographic for several years now has been further. And so mm-hmm. we call these sections the further page. So every chapter ends with a further page. And it's kind of like some bit of information, some little story about the world that kind of looks beyond the obvious to suggest something new and different. And those photographs are always spectacular. One of my favorites, I'm going to try to flip to it right now. This is so amazing. This is what the chapter called Yesterday to Tomorrow is the history chapter. And mm-hmm. our photo editor found this amazing photographer. His name is Bernard Smilda. And okay. he would go to famous places all around Europe and create a cloud inside. So this photograph,
I'm seeing it right now. Oh my gosh, this is stunning.
It's a beautiful Gothic cathedral with stained glass windows, and there's a cloud in the middle of the cathedral. I just love it.
So weird and amazing.
It really yeah. is. Yeah.
And it's like you would think it looks fake, but it doesn't look fake. It doesn't look shopped. It doesn't, you can tell there is actually a cloud in the middle of this cathedral.
Yes. It's so neat.
Oh, and I love that.
There's
so
another
much.
One, the one for the chapter that we call The Science of Us is about human culture and human health. And the further chapter of that is this amazing photograph of this festival that happens in a particular town in the Philippines every year, the Diangyang Festival. And there are these amazing, colorful headdresses all in turquoise and gold, and these guys just dancing their hearts out. I just love that picture too.
Absolutely stunning. Yeah. And you know what I have to say, I mean, one of the things that I'm always really drawn to in the almanac, and of course I love the photography is amazing, but I'm really drawn to the infographics and uh-huh. all of the times within, and I don't know how you refer to this, but all of the times within where there are examples of diversity within subjects. So like there's a page that's just animal tracks, or a page that's different seashells, for example, or uh-huh. a page that's, you know, comparing different minerals and being able to see a concept, a category that we think of sometimes as being mundane, and then see all the variability and variation within it. And it's even still just a tiny little sliver of the actual diversity that exists on this planet. Mm-hmm.
we call those our field guide pages. And my favorite one of all is the one that's called Who's Caterpillar? And so we have caterpillars on the left-hand side and the butterflies and moths that they become on the right-hand side. So you can actually pair them up and see. They don't look at anything like each other. But
yeah, but you can never guess. Oh, I see that page right now. Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
I love that one.
And I also have to say, I love the timelines. I mean, it's such a simple idea, but I'm so glad it's included because it really speaks to this understanding that in order for us to forecast into the future or even know the universe that we live in today, we have to understand the past and how we got here.
Yeah. Those were quite, they were definitely difficult. I mean, they look so finished, but in fact, there is a lot of first kind of like research and selection of the items. Of course, the timelines are all illustrated, so we have to find really good photos or artwork that goes with them. And then they're all very carefully fact-checked. And in some cases, especially when you're going back in time, there's a lot of controversy about when things happened. So we had to be pretty exacting in order to pull those together, but they've been fun. And those we did update those with every edition, mostly just kind of looking at the last column, the up to the present day, and adding anything that seemed like it was really going to end up being a milestone in that phase of history, going forward. That's always a difficult thing to decide. What is happening today that's going to be going into the history books?
Like less difficult in 2020, probably. But you're right. Oftentimes, that's a difficult question. Maybe in 2020, the difficulty is just choosing from amongst all the history making things.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's really across the board, right? So, you know, you look at a timeline and you think, okay, these are important, you know, events in human history that led us to where we are today. But obviously, that's such an editorial question. There that requires so much curation. There's not a reality of what matters versus what doesn't matter. That there's a subjectivity to that. So what a difficult process of having to select and put your nickel down on, okay, we can only fit 20 things. These are the 20 things, for example. Yep,
exactly. And these are the 20 things. And by the way, they all have to have a good picture to go with them.
Exactly. It's true. It's so visual. There's nothing in the almanac that isn't visually represented. So even though there's quite a bit of text in the sense that you're always reading and learning something, most of the text is labels. It's like subheadings. Maybe there are some paragraphs here and there, but they're all tied back to the imagery in a really special way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is what National Geographic does. I mean, that is really the tradition of National Geographic, whether we're looking at the magazines or we're looking at, you know, television, we're looking at our museum, the visual really is the predominating mode. And it's true in our books as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the sections in the book that was unexpected from the beginning. I think when we think about an almanac, there are probably certain things that if you put 10 different groups in 10 different rooms and said what should be included, there might be a lot of consensus among them to say, oh, we got to talk about space, or we've definitely got to talk about medicine, or we should definitely talk about, you know, travel. But there were sections within the almanac that I never would have thought of. And one of the one that really resonates with me personally is the quizmaster at the beginning of each of the sections.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough that you sort of passed the baton to me in 2019 and 2020 to serve in that role as Nat Geo quizmaster. And in 2021, I passed that baton back to you. And so I was hoping maybe you could share what it means to be a quizmaster and how those pages sort of came to be.
Sure. So the whole idea of the quizmaster pages is that each chapter is so full of little bits of knowledge that we thought our readers might like to play a game with themselves. And instead of a table of contents for each chapter, we have the Quizmaster spread, which is questions. You might think of them as, they're sort of like trivia questions. They are a lot like what you would, if you go to a, you know, trivia game, they're a lot like those kinds of questions. And they are asked on the Quizmaster page. And then there's a little hint of what page you can go to within the chapter to answer the question. And those have been really fun to do. And I have to say that as our fact checker has been checking the information in the regular pages, she also checks these questions and sometimes comes up with either they need to be reworded, or that's not really what that article says, or it's been quite a challenge to get them. And then these are very highly designed pages and illustrated. So there's a lot of work that goes into those Quizmaster pages, but they're a lot of fun. Here's an example. For example, this is from the chapter, the Science of Ours chapter, and I don't know the answer to this, so we're going to have to look for it. Where will you find the most microbe species? On your foot, forearm, or face?
Forearm or face. I bet you on your face. I could be wrong, though.
Page 272. Let me see if I can find
it. Oh, this is so fun, because you could really gamify this, whether it's just with your self-reading or if you're sitting down with your family.
All right, here's the answer. Let me just read the first couple of sentences on this page. The human body contains as many microbes as it does cells, nearly 30 trillion of them. Several ecosystems are found on our skin. Your forearm has the richest community with an average of 44 species.
What? Is that just because it's like out in the... Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of forward-facing.
I guess.
Gross. And you don't wash your forearms. Like, even though your hands would pick up bugs all the time, you wash your hands a lot. But your forearms are neglected.
Good point. Maybe from now on, sing happy birthday twice, you have to go up your forearm as well.
Yeah, you see surgeons, right? When they're prepping for surgery, they scrub all the way up to their elbows.
There you go.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I remember.
I think it's 14 questions for each chapter at the beginning.
14? Oh, cool. Yeah, so that's like a good game. I remember when I was doing promotion around the 2019 and 2020 almanacs, one of the things that all of the like news anchors and radio personalities loved to do was just straight up quiz me out of the blue. They would just flip to a page and be like, "What is the most endangered fish?" And I was like, "I have no idea." So I'm like desperately flipping through pages to try to answer the question.
Well, I don't think we can claim to know everything that's in this book. Sometimes I say, as a writer and as an editor, it comes in the eyeballs and out the fingertips.
And what a great thing about this book is that, you know, you can really like, there's almost too much. And I love that. It's, you know, you can pick it up so many times. You can even read the same chapters and the same pages multiple times, and you're gonna get something new every single time you pick it up.
We in creating this book, we've loved to have these little bits and pieces, and it's fun that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So I gotta ask, I mean, we did mention the Quizmaster pages, but maybe beyond that, as you know, senior editor on this project and overseeing it as the project manager, what sticks out to you as some of the more challenging parts of putting something like this together?
Well, let's see. The Instagram for sure. I would say for design purposes, I mean, I'm looking right now at one of our spreads in the Nature chapter, which has an infographic that came from the magazine. And, you know, the magazine has a certain proportion and you can sometimes even fold out a page, but we take the art and then recreate it for the proportions of our page. So that's a challenge. It's not an editor's challenge, but I still need to keep looking at it and making sure we're pulling in what we need and dropping out what we don't need. I would say the other challenge, every chapter has several of what we call geniuses. That's a term that we've kind of borrowed from the National Geographic Channel's series, Genius, which has featured Einstein and then Picasso and now Aretha Franklin coming up. So we have genius spreads throughout, and choosing people to represent various fields who have a story to tell, who have good pictures, who represent the diversity of the world and of concerns. That's you know, it's a challenge, but it's one that is satisfying to meet. So, and in this case, we have a few people who are, in fact, National Geographic explorers, like a woman, Ray Wynn Grant, who is a bear specialist, a mammal specialist. Jane Goodall, for example, who had her start with National Geographic. And then we, you know, we include even a few people who are no longer with us. I'm trying to remember, who did we have as a genius for history? And I'm not remembering, but, you know, it's always interesting to find the right people.
Right. Especially understanding those constraints of history and, you know, history was written by the victors and who had a voice and whose voice was silenced. And so to find sometimes these kind of hidden figures and celebrate them against a background of difficulty. I mean, what a big thing to grapple with in writing such a tome.
So who we ended up with in the history section, in times past, I know in one of the two earlier almanacs, we featured Ada Lovelace, who was, you know, a 19th century woman, English woman, who one could say contributed to the first computers. But this year we have Amelia Earhart, who was very much in the news. Not this last summer, but the summer before, because our wonderful ocean explorer Bob Ballard went looking for her plane, didn't find it, but he told me recently he's going back, so we'll see. And then we have also a genius page on an interesting archaeologist, Pierce Paul Kreisman, who does work in Egypt, and he's discovered that there are pyramid structures that are now underwater. So he dives in the basements of pyramids, basically, as an archaeologist.
Oh, wow. That sounds fascinating and also really kind of scary.
Yes, exactly.
I'm like, that's going to be a horror movie soon, right? Some sort of like... So I'm wondering, as you're putting this thing together and kind of helming the ship of so many incredible, incredible, hardworking people, what are some of the things that stick out for you that were the most... on the flip side of that, like the most satisfying things, some of the things that you felt after the fact, wow, that turned out like better than I could have expected. I'm really proud of either that section or that, you know, component of the almanac.
That's a hard question to answer. In a way, the book itself is the biggest answer to that question.
Right.
I am happy with, we always have ended the book with a couple, with three spreads about the future that are map-based spreads. And mm-hmm. I think they're very interesting and meaningful. They're kind of simple in their look compared to a lot of the other spreads, but we have one on called Future of the Planet that shows climate risk and where it's the most extreme and where it's the lowest. Then we have one called Future of the Wild on Earth, and that is a world map that's shaded to show where the largest proportion of terrestrial wild animals live in the world. And then the last one is our a map on the future of humans on Earth, and that reflects urban populations and where in the earth, where in the world people are more concentrated in cities than in the country. So each of these maps at a glance are pretty simple, but when you think about them and look at them and use them as a stepping point for thought, they really say a lot about our world and where we're headed.
Oh yeah. And it really goes to show that with a lot of data at our fingertips, we have the ability to conceptualize it, to utilize it, to tell a story in so many different ways. And because we as creatures have grown up in a world where data visualization has started to become more second nature to us, mm-hmm. we can take in a lot in just an image.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And it's true, and it's so interesting. I mean, I think I've gotten so much more respectful of that working on atlases and the almanac here at National Geographic, respectful of how much information gets concentrated into what looks like, you know, a map with a few colors on it, but there's so much being brought together and so much being said in those maps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gotta say, I do love the maps. They're one of my favorite parts for sure.
Yeah.
They tell us so much about ourselves.
And actually, that's one thing. I mean, that was one part of this book this year that I wrote that I have so much fun with. So every almanac has this atlas section, the last chapter, and we have a map of every continent and every ocean. And in order to keep it updated and new for each issue, for each year, we find very interesting little tidbits of information that we can add to the map. So we have call outs with little paragraphs on some of the, just an interesting bit of information. For example, I'm here looking at the map of North America, and here's a little call out from Greenland, which says that 1/3 of all citizens of Greenland live in the city of Nuuk, which is located on the southwest corner of the mostly ice-covered.
Wow!
So 1/3 of all citizens of Greenland live in this one city, which is nevertheless one of the world's smallest capitals. So,
oh, weird.
Yeah, right. So every map has new little bits of information about that continent or that ocean on it.
Oh, I love that so much. I mean, it just shows you like so many different ways to conceptualize the world that we live in and beyond. Because, of course, one of the things that we didn't even dive into and probably don't even have time to dive into is everything that exists beyond the boundaries of our planet. I mean, there's a whole big, big section about the great beyond.
There you go. Wonderful maps, not only maps of the sky, you know, sky charts with stars and constellations, but we also have maps of the moon, both the near and the far side, and maps of Mars in the book. And a new section this year on the various moons with imagery that is coming to us from these space probes that are bringing us information about the moons of other planets that we've never known about before.
Oh, gosh, I love that so much. And, you know, there's so much more to dig into with this almanac. Of course, there's no way we could ever cover it verbally here on the show. And why would we? Because it's so visual. So it's been available since before the new year started, right? It's been on the shelves and people can pick it up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. So wherever books are sold.
Yeah. Yep, definitely available wherever books are sold, if not in your bookstore, certainly online. And it is there to be had. National Geographic Almanac 2021.
Excellent. All right. Well, Susan, before we go, you know, I ask all of my guests the same two questions to close the episode. And I'm really going to be interested to hear your take, especially because of the work that you do at National Geographic, because of the work that you do on these incredibly thorough publications, and you know, your own personal perspective. So are you ready for these big picture questions?
Okay, yeah.
All right. So I want you to think about the future, which you do all the time in your work. and tell me, for you personally, what is the thing that's been keeping you up the most at night, the thing that you've been most concerned about? But then on the flip side of that, where are you finding hope? Where are you finding your optimism? And what are you looking forward to?
Well, this is going to sound like a real National Geographic answer, but that's the way my life is. And I think I'd feel this way even without. I'm the most concerned about the health of our planet, about, you know, the fact that we haven't done as much as we should as a world to come together and find ways to value and preserve the environment, the habitats, the ocean, as well as the land. That really does concern me. And I don't know that in my lifetime I'm going to see the disastrous results, but I worry that in 100 or 200 years, it's really going to be horrible. Where do I get hope? I get hope from the people that I work with. I've been working on a big book about the ocean with Sylvia Earle, who is kind of like the grand master of all things ocean. And I also worked this summer on a book with Enrique Sala, who is also a person who has just totally devoted his life to the ocean and to encouraging countries around the world to protect pieces of the ocean. I am so honored and just impressed by people like Enrique and Sylvia, who just devote their whole life and imagination to saving the planet. And I am thankful that they're there, and I'm grateful that I can help their message get to more people.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so grateful for that as well. You know, that there is an outlet, that there is a place where these messages can be fostered and curated and made available to the people that really are interested, are craving, and are needing to hear them. And through your role at National Geographic in you know, producing these incredible works, I mean, it really does, I think, make all of us more informed, more knowledgeable, and also you know, really more entertained. I really, really value that. And I'm so glad, Susan, that we were able to take some time together to walk a little bit down memory lane, but also to look to the future.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, I do love my job, and I do love this almanac that we've put together. And I'm happy to share them.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody, you guys need to pick it up. National Geographic Almanac 2021. Trending topics, big ideas in science, photos, maps, facts, and more. Susan Tyler Hitchcock, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Well, Kara, thank you for inviting me. It's been a lot of fun to talk to you.
Absolutely. And everyone listening, thank you for coming back week after week. I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.